lost the weight upon my shoulder. Now it's easier to walk. I can see the road before me. I am not afraid to fall.
All right, welcome everybody to the podcast today. Thanks for being here. We're so excited about this interview.
Yeah.
It was so fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. Yes, it's his name's Jordan Stewart, but on Instagram and YouTube, he goes by Just Another Runner.
Yeah.
And well, we talk about it in our kind of the beginning of it, but he just takes beautiful photographs on his runs. He's a trail runner and he's just like very thoughtful and talks about lots of just different concepts and thoughts. And he does these little mini videos on his feed that you can watch and kind of dive into these concepts. That
yeah. Feel like I was watching the videos before we interviewed him. I was like, wow, like I love his thoughts and I love the ideas he's going with. Like they're only like 7 or 8 minutes. So it's more of his thoughts, but then it makes you think.
Yeah. He's like, and he explains, he's like sharing what he learns. And he's like, I'm not trying to like tell people how to think or what to think. I just want to share these thoughts that are so interesting to me.
Yeah.
And that is how it comes off. Like, it's just like, he's kind of just so thoughtful and just explaining these concepts.
Right. And I feel like It's kind of maybe a broad topic is like spirituality in a way. Or even just how you see the world or how you see yourself. But like, I mean, I think he quotes scriptures like from the Bible, parables. I mean, he talks about stoicism, philosophy, Buddhism. A couple times I thought of the author Adam Grant or Brene Brown and Eckhart Tolle. Like,
yeah,
he just kind of has all these ideas and is just thinking out loud for us to hear with the beautiful scenery. And he has kind of music in the background. It's really like peaceful. Like,
yeah.
If you just would listen to one a day and then think throughout the day, the concept he's talking about, I think that would be kind of cool.
Like, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, it could almost be, yeah, almost like a little, not a meditation, but like something, something like meaningful and just like introspective about life that you can think about and like, how does this relate to me? How does it relate to my world? How, and the things going on in my life, you know?
Yeah.
So I really liked it. And we even said like, we're hoping to have him back sometime and just chat about some
more. We could have talked a lot longer because we only covered a few things and there were so many other things that I would love to have talked to him about and expound on. Cause I think he's just a really thoughtful guy that like really wants to understand humans and people and how each of our, like, we talk a lot about his, like our own personal narrative and how it like affects our lives. Like nobody's going to be the same because we all have our own lived experience and our own thoughts and that lead us to like think a certain way or believe a certain way. But we have to be careful to not have like a confirmation bias or to like forget to be curious about others. Like you talked about being certain can be really dangerous because if you're always certain, then you're not going to listen to other people's experiences and their thoughts and be open-minded and curious about just life.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there was so much and we even like messaged afterwards and I'm like, oh, there's so many more things I wish I would have brought up in that conversation. Cause I'm thinking it's one of those conversations, at least it was for us, where even after the fact, you're still kind of thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not in like a heavy way at all, just kind of in a thoughtful way.
Yeah. And, I mean, cause I talked to like my husband about it and my daughter about it. And we've talked about it since that was so thought provoking. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I don't know if excited, but enlightened by like new ideas and new thoughts. So,
yeah. So, and what was cool is we chatted with him about how kind of what started this, you know, him researching different concepts and reading different books and thoughts is he kind of went through his own faith journey or faith crisis and transition, but he's actually has landed back, still attending the LDS church and has a calling and, you know, he has been through his own faith journey. And so we thought it was really cool and just have a ton of respect for him that like, because we have a ton of respect for anyone in any phase of their journey or faith journey. And so it was just interesting for us. We liked it. We had, you know, a perspective of someone that's been through something hard in their own kind of belief system, but has found a safe landing kind of in the community that they grew up in.
Yeah. That he still enjoys, you know, the community and some of the values and stuff that he finds there that he likes to attend and to be there. And so it was kind of an interesting and thought-provoking conversation as well.
Yeah. Just an interesting perspective.
And I think it leads back to like, we all have our own personal story and our personal narrative that like leads us in a different way. Just cause we had a similar experience doesn't mean we're going to land in the same place or be in the same mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. And we liked that, you know, he's just bringing new perspectives to his religious congregations. Cause he kind of has had a little bit different path than some might have
didn't he say it was like a gospel.
Yeah. It's like a Sunday school.
Which one is that one?
Gospel Essentials. Yeah, is that what he teaches?
What he said his calling was.
So. Yeah. It's pretty cool. So yeah, we just really appreciated the conversation and we think, I mean, whether you're religious or non-religious or faith transition or not, like that's just actually kind of a tiny part of what we talk about at the beginning.
That's just kind of what like set him off on this journey of studying all these other things.
Right, right. So it was interesting, but I do know, you know, a lot of our listeners have some kind of religious background. So I think that people would find it interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you'll really enjoy this conversation, and we hope to have Jordan on again, because I think we all kind of enjoyed the conversation and we wanted to keep going. So,
So, on a different note, just for a minute. So if anyone's, we had said that our book club episode would come out this week, but we're actually postponing it for one more week. So that will come out next week. And we just had a couple things to wrap up with that. And so anyway, but we're looking forward to that a lot.
Yes, and we decided to also combine both books as well. So we'll, I don't know which one. Maybe we'll start with Atlas of the Heart with Brené Brown, because I feel like that's something, if you haven't read, there's still a conversation to be had there to listen to. Just because, I don't know, if you haven't read it, it's about emotions and humans and
We kind of are thinking like we'll take some of the key takeaways and almost like a good synopsis that, you know, we'll kind of just chat about the book and what we learned from it. And so, if you've read it, great. If you haven't or don't even plan to, or even if you plan to, it won't be a spoiler because it's it's just chatting about Brené Brown's thoughts and stuff like that.
Yeah, and her research.
And then we'll kind of talk about lessons in chemistry and so, and how that relates to some interesting like societal topics that come up in the book.
Yeah, that book, I don't, if you guys read it, it was, and if you haven't, I think I've said this before, it's really good. And I think you start out going like, what is this about? This is kind of, I don't know if this is my style of book, but the next thing you know, it's really diving deep into like family, relationships, women in the 50s and 60s, it goes into religion, it goes into society,
motherhood. That's another theme.
Yeah, the motherhood theme was really cool. Just the way that she mothered her child is really inspiring, I thought. So we'll kind of talk about those concepts as well, and then maybe end
with more of a conversation about the book.
If you haven't read it and you don't want to know what happens, then you know, you can kind of,
but we just want the episode to be like, whether you've read the books or not, you can still listen and get something from it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why we're going to combine the episodes, is we just thought it might work better. And this whole book club idea, or just like book discussion, is kind of evolving as we go, but it's been really fun and we love the book. So we still want to do them. We're just kind of figuring it out with the
episode.
And
if you did read it and you still have any thoughts or ideas, send them our way.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
We had like a small little book club with some friends in person about lessons in chemistry. And so they had some really cool just thoughts and things that they took from the book. And
So hopefully we'll share some of those so that should be fun. So that will come out the second week of March. And, happy March, happy spring coming around the corner.
I'm excited. Although it's like also cold again in Utah, but I think it's supposed to warm up again and then it's snow again.
Up and down.
And we're excited working on some, more guests that I'm excited about.
We have some cool ones coming up. Yeah. We're excited this spring. So stay tuned.
Yes. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Enjoy, Jordan. All right. Welcome to the podcast today. Today, we're so excited. We have Jordan Stewart with us. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, guys.
Hey. We've been looking forward to this for a while. I've been following you, and anyone that already follows Jordan and knows of him knows he has some really just awesome content, really profound thoughts and videos. And he's a runner, and beautiful photographs that he shares on his feed. And it's just like a really uplifting account to follow. So we'll hop into more of what he does there. But before we hop into the interview, I'll just give you a little summary of him. He says, "I care a lot about running, being outdoors, my kids, my wife, learning, creating, and sharing."
I was just going to mention, just because maybe people only know you as just a runner, right? Is that your tagline or whatever
just
for your
Instagram?
Just
another runner,
Just another runner. That's right.
And then you also have a YouTube channel as well.
Yeah.
So some great content on both of those. So go ahead and follow him there and see the beauty of, is it mainly Utah where you run?
Yeah, I'm located in Northern Utah. So most of the pictures that I have on there are from the trails around here.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Like all year long, running in the winter, fall, spring, and summer, and so pretty. So.
Yeah, I love it. And you often have your dog with you, or almost always, it seems like, right?
Yeah, she's getting old now, and so she can't really keep up, and she doesn't like to go as far as she used to. She's almost 11, and been running with me since she was, since we first got her. So she's been an amazing running companion, and I've loved every minute of it. But especially in the summers now, she gets really slow. So I take her when I can because she still loves it. But she's getting slower.
What kind of dog is she?
She's a mix. I think we know there's a lot of husky in there, But outside of that, I know there's, you know, or she looks like there's some shepherd, or, you know, everyone has an opinion when they see her on the trail. Like, oh,
yeah.
That's she must be a whatever.
Yeah. Say this. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool looking dog.
Yeah. For sure. Really.
What's her name?
Nevi.
Nevi. Cool.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then your family's so cute. Maybe you could just give us a little brief, like your kids, I mean, yeah, where you ages. Grew up, yeah. Yeah. Where you grew up, little background.
Okay. So I grew up most of my life in Kaysville, Utah, which is about 30 minutes south of where I live now in North Ogden. I went to Davis High. I graduated in 2008, and then I served a 2-year mission in Brazil for the LDS Church. And then when I got home from there, from my mission, I moved up to Logan, Utah, where I did my bachelor's degree at Utah State in global communication. And then we moved down to Ogden, where I got my master's in communication. And we've been in the Ogden area ever since. And I just fell in love with Ogden. I absolutely love it here.
Oh, cool. That's
awesome. And I met my wife at Utah State. And now we have 3 kids. My oldest is 7, and then a 5-year-old and an almost 3-year-old. So it's about 2 years in between each of them.
Fun. Oh, nice. That's a busy time with kids. Those ages.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's fun too, though. It's awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
I know. I'm like, oh my gosh, my youngest is older than your oldest. So
yeah, same. Yeah.
It goes by fast. Enjoy it.
Yes.
My youngest does. Well, yours are 9, right?
Mine are 10. Mm-hmm. So. Yep.
The youngest ones.
Yeah. And it is actually every time I drive up to Ogden area, I'm like, wow, these mountains are so pretty up here. I mean, it's just kind of a different view than we get. Well, obviously different mountains than we get down in Salt Lake. And It always, you know, I feel like, yeah, it just kind of takes your breath away looking up at those mountains.
Yeah. And I grew up going boating to Pine View. And so I love it up there. It's fun. It's beautiful.
Yeah. The mountains in Salt Lake are definitely different than the Ogden mountains. And I think there's beauty in the two kinds. Like the Salt Lake ones are so jagged. And some of the trails down there are just, it's just a different mountain range almost, even though they're all connected.
Yeah,
right.
For sure. That's awesome.
Well, it kind of makes me want to go do some hiking up in that area because I really haven't. Like, I haven't done much up there. If we go up there, it's for, you know, a game or a competition or something. So I'll have to try spend some time up there. But
So maybe just real quick, you could tell us how you got into running, how long you've been doing it, kind of what you're...
At Davis High, I ran cross country and I kind of fell in love with it. Actually, how I got into it was my sophomore year, I tried to do football. I'd never played football in my life. And I joined the Davis High football team because that's just what you do at Davis. And I got most of the way through the season and I just wasn't getting enough playing time. My dad's just like, hey, you should try cross country. So I ran, I switched and ran cross country, and we took state 2 out of the 3 years that I was there, and it was an absolute blast. I fell in love with running in cross country, and I didn't do distance in track. I actually did pole vault in track because I have some gymnastics background, and so pole vault was more my event of choice in track and field. But after high school, I just kept running, and when I got home from my mission, I ran my first marathon shortly after I got home. And it was actually a trail marathon, and I just loved it. But I ran it fairly quick, and I'd always wanted to run the Boston Marathon. And so when I ran my trail marathon in 3 hours and 30 minutes, I knew I only had to shave off 30 minutes to qualify for Boston. So I figured I could do that pretty easy on the road, and it ended up not being easy at all. But I did qualify for Boston in 2013, and then I ran the Boston Marathon in 2014.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's like a rite of passage, right?
Yeah, seriously. That experience running Boston was unbelievable, and I highly recommend it to anyone that even has a slight desire to do that. It was amazing. But after that, I switched mostly to trail running, and I do mostly trail running now.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, my daughter and my husband ran the New York Marathon, not this last November, but the November before. Mm-hmm. And even as a spectator, we actually had my daughter on talking about running the marathon because she wasn't really a runner. She was a soccer player. And my husband got to, through his work, he was able to get 2 bibs to go run it. And so I had knee problems. So I was not, I couldn't do it. So my daughter and my husband did it. And it was such a cool experience. I would kind of train with them as much as I could. And then to watch the actual marathon itself, I'm sure it's very similar to Boston. Like, it's just such a cool experience, and how many people are there just cheering everybody on, and everybody's kind of having this common goal of just, you know, finishing this big feat that they've been training for. And it's cool. Running is really cool. Competitions and races are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Listening to Whitney's episode, well, interviewing her for that episode, it was just really neat. It made me want to run a marathon, and I am not a runner at all. So I'm like, but it's still, yeah, it just seems like such a neat thing. And yeah, awesome. Yeah. I really admire people that can run. I feel like it takes, well, a patient person, someone that has a lot of endurance. I mean, and also you're just sitting with your thoughts so much. So, which actually
is probably why you have all these amazing thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, exactly. Like, that if you look at my Instagram channel, there's a lot of photography and video from my runs. And it's generally because that's where I go to think and to process. And it has more from, like, I used to run to, you know, stay in shape or to be fit or to lose weight. And it's just kind of become a part of me that is like non-negotiable. Like my morning run, even if I'm not feeling 100% or if I didn't sleep well because one of the kids was up all night, like, it's not really even a question of whether or not I will run in the morning. It's how far. So
that's awesome.
It sounds cliche and maybe a little bit, you know, of an exaggeration to say this, but it felt life saving through the transitions that I've had in my life.
Mm. Yeah. I think running, I mean, I've gone through stages in my life where I've run a lot and not as much depending on what my body's doing, but not just the exercise part, but like you're saying, like the mental part and the flow, and there's no other exercise that's like that.
Yeah.
Running and being outside and feeling, just letting my mind kind of go where it needs to go. And it can be so healing and so good for different things that are going on in life. And so, yeah, I love that.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some sort of science behind it and the embodiment of running that allows you to go into your, you know, into your psyche to be able to understand things that you wouldn't be able to if you weren't moving like that. At least that's what I tell myself. I haven't looked into
it. Yeah, I'll bet there is.
Yeah.
Maybe we could look that up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's cool. Well, yeah, maybe that's kind of a good even transition point in this conversation to start talking about the transitions in your life. So, and how your running has played into those. So,
yeah, I can talk about my faith crisis. My faith crisis began back in 2016, and I don't really care to get into the specifics of what I, of the topics that I covered and the topics that I dove into when I was going through that. But long story short, I was sitting in a team meeting in the company that I was working for at the time. And one of my coworkers mentioned that Joseph Smith was a polygamist. And I didn't know that at the time. And in fact, I knew that he wasn't. In my mind, I knew he was not a polygamist. But then my boss, who was an active member, agreed with my coworker. And it made me kind of second guess what I thought to be true. And so I don't remember much of what else happened in that meeting, but I remember immediately after that going back to my desk, sitting down at my computer and typing into Google, is Joseph Smith a polygamist, or was Joseph Smith a polygamist? And the things that I discovered, I remember I don't remember a lot of the details, but I remember the feeling. And the feeling was like getting punched in the stomach. Like I was 26 at the time, and I had, you know, lived my whole life not knowing something that I feel like I should have known. And I remember even on my mission in Brazil, arguing with people, telling them that Joseph Smith was not a polygamist. And so it was just, I felt a little deceived. And so over the next couple of days that turned into months, that turned into years, I decided that I wanted to never experience that feeling ever again of being like punched in the stomach or blindsided by something that I didn't know about, something that was so core to my identity at the time, which was a member of the church. And so it turned into about 4 years of me listening to podcasts, reading books, reading conference talks, like anything that the church was putting out or that other people were putting out about the church. I dove head first. And I sought that knowledge because, like I said, I didn't want to feel that feeling of being blindsided again. But From those 4 years from 2016 to 2020, I consciously decided to never trust my intuition, because how could I trust something that had betrayed me and that was so wrong for so long? And so, like I said, I was seeking knowledge, and I wanted to, everything that I was bringing in, I wanted to be evidence-based and proven. Like, I didn't want anything that was even remotely unstable. And so that's just what I went after, was all of that knowledge, and I wanted to know things. And the problem was, is that the further down that path I went, the more I realized that the more I thought I knew, the less I actually knew. And I was becoming super divisive and angry, and I was becoming someone I didn't want to be. And so in sometime around 2021, I moved away from this whole knowledge seeking and moved more towards I wanted to be more conscious of the life that I was living and live a more wise life, and one focused on transformation and transcendence. And that was very much aided by some of the authors that I found at the time, like Richard Rohr or Don Ruiz or Eckhart Tolle, and philosophers like John Vervaeke and Ian McGilchrist. Like, those people were instrumental in me moving away from obsessing over being right and knowing things to a more, like I said, a more transcendent path where knowledge wasn't as important as wisdom. So that whole faith crisis was very much a catalyst for me awakening to a new sense of reality.
Yeah. And it makes sense to me that, you know, when you're in the church, you're told exactly what to do. What's the afterlife? Why are we here? What should we be doing while we're here? And so it's more like you feel like you have the knowledge of all this. And so if that falls away, I can see how it's easy to be like, okay, well then what is right? I want to know exactly what is right, and to seek all this knowledge, and then to realize, okay, there's really not maybe a right way or an exact, we can't know all these things. And so it's better to mentally and, you know, with your psyche or whatever, to go seek just wisdom, like how to live a better life or what works for you and your own thoughts and the way you see the world. Then it makes more sense to come back to that.
Yeah. And I don't fault anyone for going down a similar path, but ending up in a different place than me. So for example, I still attend church and I actually hold a calling. The way I go to church and the way I practice this religion is very unique, and it works for me in the sense that I wouldn't be considered, you know, completely orthodox. I have very big doubts about the existence of God, and for a long time I considered myself an atheist, and I'm still working my way through that. But all that to say, like, the people that leave the church immediately after 1 month, I totally respect that path. And the people that also, you know, go 20 years and continue to go to church, like, I respect that too. My path just is for me, and I have loads of respect for anywhere or for anyone wherever they end up.
Yeah. I feel that way too. And yeah, I just love, I mean, I relate so much to your story and even the beginning of, you know, how your faith crisis went. And I think that that's kind of like, once you've exhausted all the, like, quote unquote research you can do and the truth seeking, then what you're left with is trying to find kind of peace and just finding, you know, and it's often like wisdom and philosophy and everything that I think can bring us there. So, and I think it's neat that if, you know, for people that can still hold on to like the community that they were raised in and the community that they live around, you know, I think that that would be really neat. And it's really, I admire people that are able to kind of find, like, come back from some that faith. Yeah. And come from the faith crisis and still be able to land there. So, right. Yeah, I respect that.
And I do
a lot.
Think it's good. I mean, I would think that for members in your ward to like see that, because I think there's a lot of fear in people that have a faith crisis, you know, on the other side, like, oh, my daughter's having a faith crisis. This is so, I'm so scared. Where are they going to end up? What's going to happen to them? For you to be like, you know, may or may not see the world like they do or follow the doctrines or the truth or even believe in God, but you're still wanting to be part of them and the community and you're a good person and you want to add value. I think that's good for everybody all around.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure. And I think that's like, hopefully, where more religions are moving in that direction, where more people can be included, no matter, it's not such a black and white way of doing the religion, but can be more, I mean, I use the word nuance because I don't know how else to say it, but you know, just more gray area, more room for different thoughts and ways of thinking about things. So
And living it in a way that kind of works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've been very lucky with the local leadership that I've experienced, that I've come in contact with. And the last two bishops have been incredibly understanding and tried to involve me as much as I'm willing to be involved, which I think is awesome because of what you're saying. There's a lot of fear around people that go through a faith crisis, whether that's in the ward or in your family. Everyone knows someone that's gone through something like what we've gone through, and it can be super intimidating. And so I hope that I can make it less daunting to them and make it more normal and realize that it's not the end of the world if someone's beliefs shift, that it can be a beautiful thing if you're willing to see them for who they are and make room for that.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's really cool. Well, we have so many interesting topics that we want to dive into with you, but I love that we got that background of kind of like what led you to, you know, looking into these different philosophies and concepts and things that relate to life. And so, yeah, is there anything else along the line of faith crisis that you'd want to talk about? Or I'm sure maybe it will spill into some of the other, maybe not, but yeah. Is there anything else with that?
No, other than like I just want to kind of bridge the gap between the end of that story to where I am now, because sometime in 2021, when I started to move more towards the philosophical side of living life, I started to come across these people, and some of these thought leaders like Ian McGilchrist and John Vervaeke and these people that are out here like talking about the meaning crisis that we're experiencing and kind of like a bigger picture, because I was so focused on my small, unique lived experience of my Mormon faith crisis that there's bigger things to be understood out there. And so when I was learning all of this, I would often go to my wife and kind of just rant to her all of this stuff that I was learning. And, you know, bless her heart, she put up with me for a long time, but I decided that I wanted to start making videos, because mostly for a selfish reason, because I know the way that I learn is by talking about things. Not necessarily, I hope my videos don't come across like I'm teaching or preaching something, but the way I learn best is by listening to someone talk and then going and telling someone else what I learned. And so that's generally what I'm doing in these videos, is like, I will listen to a podcast like yours or watch John Vervaeke on YouTube, and I will pick something out in there, and like I'll just have this light bulb go off, and I'll usually write it down. I have a notebook that I carry with me, or I'll just do it in my notes app on my phone. And then what I'll do is I'll like kind of double click into that topic, into that, even just like a phrase that they say. And then I get so excited about that, I want to share it. And I very much enjoy running. And so I blended my passions of learning and running and videography and made a YouTube channel where I talk about a lot of stuff running, but a lot of stuff philosophical too. And one of those topics that John Vervaeke introduced me to was ontological shifts. And I thought it was a fitting topic to talk about in this podcast because, I mean, it's about beautiful shifts.
Yeah. Right.
And the term ontology it's a branch of metaphysics, but I'm not smart enough to talk about metaphysics, but the simple definition of that is it's basically, ontology is the nature of being. So how I understand it is your ontology is what it's like to be you. And so this podcast is about beautiful shifts, and sometimes beautiful shifts aren't so beautiful at the moment. Right. And even in hindsight, you can look back and think, oh, that was more brutal than it was beautiful. Like it was very brutal during that process. So the idea of ontological shifts is that it's essentially a shift in your way of being, in your reality. And so ontological shifts are literally like life altering. And it can, and when that happens, it can produce ontological shock, which is when you discover something that's so life-changing that your reality essentially collapses. And that ontological shock, like learning that, that term ontology and ontological shock and ontological shift, it like, it opened up a window in my mind so that I could understand what I went through a little bit better and understand that it's not unique to me. It's not even unique to Mormonism. Like there are people out there experiencing ontological shifts all the time. And it doesn't even have to be like a big faith crisis. Like I was talking to one of my friends recently and they were talking about how they had learned something about someone that was very, very close to them pretty much their entire childhood up until adulthood. And they learned something about that person that was so like, it changed the way that they saw their own personal history and therefore it shifted their present as well. And that was an ontological shift for them. I don't think they like fell into ontological shock by any means, but it was life shifting. It was reality shifting, paradigm shifting. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That's really cool because I wasn't quite sure what the meaning was. And that is, does fit really well with our podcast and explains what you went through when you found out things about the church you didn't know, you know, and I feel like I've gone through that myself.
Yes, yeah. For sure.
With that and other things. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, like back to like the name of our podcast, like eventually you can get to the beauty. It's kind of like what you learn from the big shift and even, but sometimes like those ontological shifts, I don't know, like, or especially when you, what did you call it? It's the ontological shock.
Yeah.
That part, I don't know if that could ever be found beautiful, but it's more the lessons that you learn after and through it. And then, yeah, what you end up being on the other side, which I do feel like probably all of us feel grateful in a way for what we went through, even though it was so hard and traumatizing at times, you know, it sounds like dramatic, but it really is. But then I'm like so grateful for these new perspectives that I have and things. So yeah, I love that. I'm excited to hear you talk more about it. So yeah. Yeah.
While you guys were talking, I kind of remembered a funny story that is similar. It was kind of an ontological shift. Just in case people aren't quite getting it, I thought I'd share an embarrassing story from something that has happened to me. So, back when my wife and I were engaged, I went and did summer sales that summer. And, at the time I was reading The Hunger Games, the series. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, right before I left to go do summer sales, I grabbed one of the books. I think it was the third book. Anyways, I got on the plane and I started reading it. I read it, you know, in my downtime because we'd go do the sales all day and then we'd get home at night and I would read the book. And I remember asking my wife, like, or my fiance at the time, like, when does Katniss come into this? Like, when did the Hunger Games start? And I remember getting 3/4 of the way through the book and Hunger Games hadn't started. And I got all the way I'm not kidding. I got to the last page of the book, finished it, and I took off the paper cover of the book, and it was the second book in the Maze Runner series. And like, oh, I had read the entire book.
Without realizing.
Realizing that it was and to my defense, those are both like dystopian.
Yes, they're similar. Yeah.
And like, Denver in Maze Runner is like the capital. And so when they talk about Denver, I'm like, oh, I guess we're calling the capital Denver now. Oh, like it was so weird. But when I took off that cover, it was seriously like almost like an ontological shift. I was like, did I seriously just spend so much time reading this book? And it wasn't even the book that it's I thought.
Oh, wow. And to like unravel what you thought you were reading about Hunger Games and realize, no, wait, that was a whole different book. Cause you spend hours reading books. Like that would be really kind of a crazy experience. Yeah.
It's so embarrassing. I haven't told very many people that. So.
Now a lot of people know. No, I'm just kidding. That is funny. Yeah. But that's a good example. Cause it kind of like throws your world from under you, or what you thought like you knew of what was going on in this world of these books. It was totally different. Yeah. Yeah.
So, awesome. But anyways, like learning concepts like ontology and ontological shifts and ontological shocks, like I think it has a pretty good effect on you as a person when you go out and learn these new topics. Not that knowledge is everything, but it definitely gives you the ability to have the power to understand your life in a different way, which kind of brings me to the next point that I wanted to talk about, which is your personal narrative. Like we all live our lives, and in our minds, we're always telling ourselves stories, and stories are incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of, there's a short story. It's like, it's considered to be the shortest story ever written. And it's attributed to Ernest Hemingway, and it's only 6 words. And those 6 words are, "For sale, baby shoes, never worn." And like those 6 words can bring a lot of emotions. Like I saw your reaction there. And like your interpretation of that story was unique to your lived experience. And it was different than the interpretation that I could have had. And so like the two takeaways that we can have from that are that stories are powerful and our interpretations are based on our own lived experience. It's similar to like the parable of the wise men and the elephant, where there's a bunch of blind wise men and they go to the elephant and they're all touching the elephant on different parts. Like, and so they go back to their villages and they say, oh, like an elephant is smooth and pointy at the end, or an elephant is like a column, or an elephant is like a snake, and they're like touching the trunk or the tusk or the leg. And then they go back with their limited experience, with their limited understanding of what an elephant is, and they project that to everyone else. And I think that's like, we all have our own personal narratives, and those are only partial understandings of what a larger, more objective truth would look like. So
yeah, that's a good example. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And it's so true. And I think it's so easy as humans to think that our experience is the experience, like that we don't pay attention to the way that other people live, or that they touch part of the elephant that I didn't even touch. So we don't have this, understanding of the whole picture, because we're only in our own head or only looking at our own personal narrative and story.
Yeah. Well, and then you, like, some people might think to ask the other person, like, well, what was the part that you touched? What was that like? Mm-hmm. But then I was also thinking some people could have had a blindfold on and it made it even, they couldn't even see that there was a whole elephant. Like there's a lot of different, so you can imagine the different people and how the metaphor can relate to that as well. And yeah, that's a great way to bring that in definitely. For as an example. Yeah.
It like, we all have massive gaps in our understanding, and we fill those gaps. Like, we want to have a complete story in our head. And so we fill the gaps in our understanding with our best guesses. And oftentimes those guesses aren't super accurate. And for better or for worse, we want those complete stories. And Viktor Frankl's book, A Man's Search for Meaning, I don't know if you guys have read that
comes
book.
Comes up a lot on our podcast.
Yeah, it has come
I can
up
imagine
with
why.
Yeah.
But there's a quote in that book, and I'm going to butcher it, but he essentially says that when the Jewish prisoners, whenever they are surviving and doing well, it's because they have a good story. That the personal narrative that they're telling themselves is one of, that gives them a good why. And I think what he says is that if we're able to have a personal narrative that gives us a good why, we're able to support any how. And essentially saying, like, these prisoners had to develop a meaningful story, and that would dictate whether or not they would survive the torture that they had to endure in a concentration camp. And I just found that so powerful, that our minds, what the narrative that we're telling ourselves in our minds can affect our reality so deeply for these Jewish prisoners, that they can survive or die based off of that story.
Yeah, it's super powerful. And it reminds me, I don't know if you know of this podcast, but it's called the 1090 podcast. And we had the two hosts on that podcast, Mason and Sam, come on the podcast. And Sam had dwarfism, and that was part of his story. And Mason lost his whole family, multiple members of his family in a car accident. And he wasn't with them. And so he didn't know, like, how do I move on? How do I do this? All I have is my son. I lost my brother. I lost my wife. I lost two of my kids, you know. But he had heard of this concept called the 1090, where life is 10% what happens to you and 90% what you're going to do about it.
Wow.
And so it's all about what we can do and how we react to things. We cannot control what happens. We don't, but we can kind of decide how we're going to go with that path and how we're going to go along with it. And if those prisoners in the camp decided to say, this is the worst thing ever. I can't, you know, believe I'm here. I don't want to be here. And, you know, and what would be so easy to do. It was horrible circumstances. And just like Mason's circumstances was so hard and was a really hard story. And he, and now he has a podcast where he talks and to all different people that have had tragedy in their lives and how they move on. But it's like so powerful. Our minds can be so powerful in how we look at things and how we decide to go forward. And if you have like a meaning, and if you have, if you kind of control how you react instead of like, I can't go on, I can't do this, poor me, this is the worst, then that's going to, yeah, you can die in a concentration camp. But if you just change your mindset, and it's amazing what the mind can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking, it's interesting because everyone comes at things from a different background. And so I don't know, like, I'm just like, how are some people able to, and I do think, so right now I'm doing my master's in social work. So I'm learning a lot about like the life course and the lifespan and how, you know, different transition points in your life. And I know like there's people with a lot of past trauma and complicated family situations or just different, you know, biological challenges and mental health and things. So I definitely think that can play into it, but somehow, yeah, some people, even with challenges like that, are able to, yeah, somehow they're still able to come away putting, I don't even know if you want to say positive, but like meaning in their personal narrative, like even in the concentration camp, you know? So anyway, I think like, and I do have so much admiration for people that, you know, control their personal narrative and are able to come from, but I also think there's people that just aren't able to, and sometimes they still are, but I don't know, like, I don't know if that makes sense. I'm just trying to like give compassion for all people and absolutely, what they're able to do with their narratives. Cause I think like life is hard, you know, and I think Sam and Mason are amazing that they were able. And I wonder, you know, I'd love to talk to him again and even like dive more into, so like, what are some tools that you, you know, we kind of did do that, but yeah. I like to know even more, you know, sometimes I don't know, like, is it their background? Is it tools? Or is it just the strength of mind? Yeah, I just think there's a lot of things that go into it. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we're hitting up against a paradox here of like, it's inevitable in life that you will be a victim to something. But at the same time, to rise above that victimhood is, how do I explain this better?
I know. I don't know if I just made that more complicated bringing that in, but I just want to, because I feel like, and I do have so much admiration for people that are able to take hard things and get a personal narrative that's positive and move on and do amazing things with it. But there's other people that aren't, and they sit in the sorrow of their situations. And I don't want to like delegitimize their experiences either, because we don't know where they came from or what their mental state is that they aren't able to, you know, even those people in the concentration camps, like some people like Viktor Frankl and others were really able to, but I'm sure there's some that just give up.
Well, and, I mean, but, it's just, you know, even in life. I mean, people, I don't understand suicide.
Right. A lot, I'm thinking about suicide.
Yeah. That if people, if they just, it's too much, it's too hard. And then they decide to just end their life. Like, it's a very complicated thing.
And they're no less of a person or an important because they couldn't, you know, form their personal narrative to kind of have that more positive outlook. But at the same time, like, I've been doing a case study on my grandma for my class, and she came from, you know, had abusive husband after abusive husband, but eventually she was able to change her personal narrative. And she just decided like, I want to make a better life for myself and for my kids. And so, and I look at her and I'm like, how did she do that? You know, and even coming from a really hard childhood, how does some people, and I don't think that we'll ever really know, but I think there's just so many things that go into the whole person and the whole experience of life, you know, that, but I do think, and that's part of why we do this podcast, is having the examples of people that can do that gives us all strength. You know what I mean? We could see someone that's been through something hard or even just a hard mindset shift and are able to move on and like find meaning in life. And that gives us all strength to like do the same or at least try to do something similar. Yeah,
that's probably why that book comes up so much, because we're all inspired by him. Cause we all think, could we have done that? Could we have done what he did? Maybe we couldn't, but we're inspired by the fact that he did. And so it gives us some like meaning and direction to like go through our trials and our things, you know, that are hard.
Definitely. And you mentioned like having compassion on people as they, you know, as they try to do this, because it's easy for us who have gone through something to just say, oh, like it's your personal narrative. You need to fix that. Like just change the way you're talking about life. And that is so like, there is not something that is more easier said than done than that. Like
you cannot
just sit, tell someone like to stop being sad or tell yourself that you're happy. Like it's so much more complex than that. But I think what we're saying is that our personal narrative is incredibly powerful, but that doesn't take away from the difficulty that is life and the different experiences and just perspectives that someone brings into any sort of situation and circumstance. And that, that's kind of what another thing that I wanted to talk about. Compassion is one of the three words that I have come to adopt in my life that have completely changed my life. And the three words are curiosity, compassion, and acceptance. And I stole these from someone. I listened to a podcast years ago and I wrote them down and I failed to write down which podcast it came from or who was even on that podcast or anything. But so if you're out there, reach out to me because I'd love to thank you for
give you
changing
credit.
My life with those three words.
Yeah. But, and I'd have to say really quick, when I was watching some of your videos, like that was one of my favorite ones. And I feel like, and we can go back to this after you explain these, but all of those things help our personal narrative be more understanding of others. Like if we have those three things along with our own narrative, because that's all we have, then we can understand people better with the compassion, curiosity, and acceptance. Mm. And it all comes back together. So I love this. So let's talk about these.
Let's talk about them. I wasn't planning on like defining each one because they're somewhat self-explanatory, but the reason that these three words have changed my life are not only to your point to like approach yourself with curiosity, compassion, and acceptance, but also the relationships you have with other people. Because it doesn't take long in any relationship outside of small talk, you're going to come across conversations and topics that are divisive. And if you can approach a conversation with these three words in mind, like it has been, like I can't say it enough. It's been life-changing for me. So, and those topics can be anything from like politics to religion to parenting styles or even to hobbies that people have, like running. Like when someone talks to me about running, I am very adamant that it is the best form of exercise that someone can have because of, you know, and I have 50 reasons why. And so when someone comes to me and says, no, it's CrossFit, like we can butt heads on that. But right. And that's like a dumb example. But if you can approach these with curiosity, and in fact, curiosity is probably my number one word out of that. I feel like if you're going to be one thing in this life, be curious. Because curiosity is at the base of, I think, so many good virtues that we can have. And that's just, you know, my personal.
I agree. No, I agree.
For sure. Yeah.
And that also comes up a lot, I feel like, on our podcast as well. Yeah. Is the way to have good relationships, the way to mend relationships, it's just, and to not be judgmental. I mean, we come up with that quote, that Whitman quote all the time, is to be curious, not judgmental. Mm-hmm. And the only way that you can, if you're judgmental, it's because you're not being curious for the most part.
Yeah, because pretty much if you're curious about someone and kind of know where they're coming from, which kind of ties back into what we were talking about, you can't judge, you know, you realize like, oh, there's much more to this person's story. But then I also think like curiosity about just life in general. And I mean, even curiosity is what led you to all these concepts and these things. So curiosity just all around. Yeah, I agree. Like it's probably the number one value, virtue, whatever you want to call it. That's probably, I don't know. I mean, we can't say that for everyone, but it's so valuable for sure.
Yeah, I think so. And, I have a person in my life that, they kind of do the opposite of curiosity, compassion, and acceptance with pretty much anyone that I've seen them interact with. Like they will basically run out of breath trying to get their point across. And then when they stop talking, they're thinking about what they're going to say next. And that's kind of the opposite of what you should do if you're going to create meaningful relationships in your life. There's a quote from a book that I haven't read. It's by Stephen Covey. It's the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Yeah. He says that we should seek first to understand and then to be understood. And it's been my experience, and I probably shouldn't go up against, you know, a top seller. It's probably been on every list that ever was for bestsellers. But I think that we should just seek to understand. I don't think we can ever force someone to understand us. And so if they, like my friend, are unwilling to approach a conversation or a relationship with curiosity, compassion, or acceptance, you're going to waste your breath every time you try and share an opinion. And so I think a lot of our effort is wasted in seeking to be understood, when if we could just seek to understand, it's going to leave us in a better situation, and it's going to hopefully strengthen the relationship regardless of how the other person is.
Yeah. I was thinking, I feel like if you seek to understand someone and they're receptive, they will reciprocate to want to understand you back if they're that type of person. But like you said, then you run into people that aren't, and we can't control, like, you know, how they think or how they feel, or even if they're curious or want to understand us. So, but yeah, if we kind of like, you know, give that, what's the word? Like, is olive branch? Give that, you know, take them, that first step. Yeah. And try to understand them. Then I don't know. I think most people reciprocate, not all, but like a lot of people, but sometimes we don't want to give people even that benefit of the doubt. So you don't take that step to even try to understand where they're coming from, and then no progress is made. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And I do feel like you said, it could happen in small, you know, running or CrossFit or like those things come up all the time. But like, I feel like in these days, it really is like politics and religion. Like, it's so divisive. People feel like they are right and the other people are wrong. There's no nuance. There's no gray area. It's black and white. And in so many conversations, because we obviously, like, most likely all have family members that see the world differently than we do, whether it is religion or politics or philosophy or whatever it is, they're going to see the world differently. And if we want to have a loving relationship with them, we have to be curious on why they think the way they do. We have to have compassion for why they think the way they do, because it could have been something they've gone through in a different life story and everything, and then kind of accept who they are and not try to change who they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that just never works. If you think, okay, I'm going to go on this and I'm right and I have this, and if I just tell them this, they'll know and they'll agree with me, and then we can be on the same side. Like that, just, I don't know if that ever works.
Yeah. And it's so easy to get in that mindset though. Like, I'm not, you know, but I do think just kind of recognizing if you have a tendency to do that, because I know I've had a tendency to do that at times.
Sure.
Yeah. It's almost like, what do they call it? The reptilian brain, like almost our fight or flight takes over. Cause I think you get very defensive of like what your perspective is, and you want, it's almost like, I want you to know that I'm good and that I have valuable perspectives too. And that I'm, because I think it also gets clumped into a lot of like, my way's right and this is the good way or the right way. And then this, so you're like, well, no, I'm not a bad person. I'm not thinking this because, so right. Also we have to like take a step back and be like, okay, that like, I have to realize and really just go back to what you're saying. If you try to understand someone else, you don't even have to say what your side of whatever conversation is. Most likely they'll either reciprocate that, or if they don't, then that's okay. At least you understood them. And I don't know, there's value to everyone's opinions, right. You know?
Yeah. And I think it can get really personal, because usually your religious beliefs, political beliefs or whatever are usually the core of who you are and what you think your values are. And when your values are being attacked, you can get defensive. And so to be able to be curious and realize, I think mostly like what happens is you guys, the values are very similar. It's just where they're coming at and where they're coming from. They don't realize, oh, we all want to, you know, love people and be kind and serve or whatever these things are. They all come from the same, like, they don't come from the same place, but they all kind of end up in the same, if you're open to having a conversation about
it. Yeah. Well, it's like that whole thing. We're more similar than than we are different, really. Like, I think it really is true.
But if you go on social media and Twitter, sometimes you think that's not the case.
Right.
You feel like the world's so divided and you're like, oh my gosh, where are these people coming from?
Yeah.
Seriously. And it, like what you're saying there, it's like, Chantel, you were saying, like, it seems like we often forget that we agree a lot on the what, but we often disagree on the how we get there. Because we have a lot of the same goals. Like, I don't think there are very many people on the left politically or on the right politically that are trying to tear down this country.
Right.
But yet that's what we think of the other side. They're like, oh, they're trying to tear the family down. I don't think anyone's trying to tear the family
right.
down. And I don't think anyone's trying to tear the country down. We're just disagreeing on the how we get there. Mm-hmm. And if we can approach it with, you know, curiosity, compassion, like compassion on their lived experience, and then ultimately acceptance of who they are, and that likely to your, what you guys were saying, we're not going to change people. Like, people change themselves. Like, nothing I say or do is going to change anyone's mind. And this conversation also reminded me of, like, it's easy to approach a conversation that you can have with curiosity, compassion, and acceptance. But there are many situations where we can't, or like if the person is unwilling to have a conversation or is geographically distant and we can't connect with someone on a personal level, with and use the those three words, we can use a term that I learned from Dr. Becky Kennedy, and it's MGI, most generous interpretation. And I feel like this goes hand in hand with curiosity, compassion, and acceptance, because when we give someone the most generous interpretation, we're essentially granting them all of that without them having to explain themselves. Because, you know, if my mom did something at a family gathering, I can, and I didn't really understand where she was coming from, but it came across as very antagonistic or controlling or you name it, I could get super upset and assume that she had the worst intentions for me or for my family or for my wife, like whatever happened. Or I could give the most generous interpretation and assume that she was doing what she thought was best in the moment. Because like I said, with the politics thing, I just don't think there are very, very many people out there actively antagonistic, trying to do harm. And so I think the most generous interpretation is often the best route to take, because it alleviates stress and it makes relationships better. Even if the most generous interpretation was not correct, I think that's one of the best things that you can do to live a more stress-free life.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's like giving someone the benefit of the doubt. Like you're kind of, because you could automatically just react if you felt like it was not the best interpretation. You weren't giving them that leeway or whatever, then it could cause a lot of issues if you automatically, oh, they just want me to fail, or they just, but yeah, that's a good, is that the doctor?
That's
Good Insight,
yeah,
that
good
book?
Insight.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's her.
Yes. I love her. She's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really, really like her. I love that. Yeah, it's something to think about. And I think it's interesting because it can be on bigger things or just even like little interactions, like you're saying, with, you know, situations with family or friends or whatever. And so, yeah, I think like it can be bring a more peaceful life. You know, if you're the kind of person that's always pushing up against whatever anyone says and feeling defensive all the time and taking that kind of more negative interpretation, then relationships are just going to be harder, you know?
Yeah.
And so, true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's funny. I think I just mentioned this a couple episodes ago about when my husband and I were first married and I would like get my feelings hurt or something. Mm-hmm. And he would say, I never am intentionally trying to hurt your feelings. So if, can you just give me the benefit of the doubt that like the first thought is that he's not trying to hurt my feelings. We're just not understanding each other. So let's talk about it instead of automatically think, well, that was rude or that was mean, or why would he say that or something? You know, I mean, I've been married 25 years now, so I get how we work, but it was like within the first couple of years, I was like, yeah, of course he's not trying to be, I need to give him the benefit of the doubt. I need to give him the good interpretation. Because that's just an easier way to begin a conversation than just be defensive automatically.
Yeah. Because honestly, like this is a broad summary of all, like everything that we're trying to say so far in this podcast. Like we all have our own unique experience and perspective, and we bring that into a relationship, and then our partners bring that same thing from their perspective into the relationship, and it just gets so messy. And so like that's kind of like my whole purpose behind what I'm trying to do is live a life that is more awake to the reality that what I experience is not objective truth, that everyone has their own lived experience and that's okay. And going into every situation awake to that, I just feel like it just makes everything better. I hope that makes sense.
Oh, no. Yeah.
I love that.
That was beautifully said. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I've thought this a couple times as you were talking and since the beginning, but I would, for me, so it's my story, for me to leave my religion that I grew up in, helped me to be a more compassionate, curious person with acceptance. Because I feel like for me, having someone tell me what to do and how to do it, I wasn't really intellectually curious about the world because I thought I had the path. I had the way I needed to have my marriage, how I needed to raise my kids, and how I was supposed to live my life. And I think in some ways that can be good and it can be positive. But for me, I feel like as I started deconstructing, like the world became so beautiful and I was curious about everything and everyone. Like, I wanted to travel the world more. I wanted to read more books. I wanted to know more about different belief systems. I wanted to know more about people in general. And that's probably one of the reasons why I have this podcast. I just became so curious about people, which I think once you become curious and learn stories, then the compassion acceptance comes. And it's just been a beautiful thing. And to recognize my own story is so different than others. And it's because it's so limited that I need to hear other people's stories so that I can learn and grow. Otherwise I can't, because I'm too limited in my own thoughts and my own experience that I can't have the awakening and of just the world and life in general. And it can be such a beautiful thing. It can be hard too and heartbreaking. But that's part of just life. It all comes together. So
you said something in there that reminded me of the idea, and something that I'm fully convinced of, and that's that certainty is the ultimate roadblock for progress. Like, and you can practice your religion and still approach it with a healthy uncertainty. I think, to your point, Chantel, like I look at a lot of people who practice religion and the dogmatic, strict, orthodox, the way that they approach the religion, I just can't see it as healthy. Like, when you go through life with zero curiosity, feeling like that you know everything that you need to know, it just feels like a constricted way of living. And I want everyone to feel empowered to live the life that they live. But at the same time, I can't help but think that when you approach life with an absolute certainty, that you're missing out on the beauty that the universe has when it becomes mysterious and you have that curiosity to go and seek truth. And it just, like, I agree with you. Like, I still participate in a way with my religion, but I have never loved life so much now that nothing is certain. I hope that made sense.
Love that.
Well, and I think people in religion, that's, I think, one of the, I don't want to say like harmful things, but a thing that can be a little confused, because they're kind of told that the certainty is what's going to bring them happiness and beauty in life. And so then when you go and have a conversation with someone that's super religious and you say, well, actually I can find beauty in the uncertainty, but they can't accept that. But I can understand why not, because they've been told that for so long and they haven't experienced, you kind of have to be, I think, pushed for some reason to have to have that realization.
Yeah. It's kind fear of, is a lot of it too. Like, fear of the unknown. Yeah. I didn't mind that. I kind of find a lot of beauty in like the unknown, and I actually don't feel stressed about it. I don't feel like, I kind of like not knowing and thinking of all the possibilities. And I think for some people that is fear, and that's hard. Nobody wants to have fear, you know, have that.
Right. I sometimes think of that too. And like, I have compassion for people that also that maybe don't ever want to go down the path of, because the fear that's holding them from, you know, maybe looking and researching or doing whatever, maybe they couldn't, you know, for whatever reason, withstand kind of the fear of what the uncertainty of things might, you know, throw them off of. And so I have compassion for that too. But it was kind of reminding me of like, because I have teenagers, you know, I have like a 6-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl, and they do tend to think black and white, like, a lot. And, you know, and it's funny because I kind of have this new perspective and I want everything to be in the gray and this and that, but I've had to kind of accept that they'll get there eventually, but their brains don't. I mean, and I think that we have good conversations and I try to show, things aren't all good or all bad. And people aren't all good or all bad. Like, there's so much complexity to life, but it almost reminds me of like, I don't know, the path of thought too, like a teenager moving to adulthood and being able to kind of like, it was kind of like my religious experience too, like going from like kind of black and white thinking to there's just so much in between and gray area. And these kind of, you know, all these kind of concepts that you're talking about that can go into a good life and just, you know, having greater understanding and compassion for people. And I don't know, those three things, I just love that. The curiosity, compassion, and understanding, acceptance.
But I do think it is, I think even scientists aren't certain. They're very open to the idea that they're going to find new information that can change their whole idea of what they thought was true.
Yeah. And that's actually exciting for them.
Yes. Yeah. It's not like, oh, we failed because we thought this was true. It's like, oh, wow, we found more things because we weren't so set in it that we didn't look for other options or theories or whatever.
Right.
And so it can just open up all the things, not just in science, but in our minds and relationships and society.
Yeah. I think a lot of people look to science for certainty, but that's not what science is about. They're about, you know, a constant evolution of thought and constantly progressing and becoming better. And yeah, that's what's beautiful about science, is that it's all theory based. It's not all certain like we assume it is sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah, that is true. Oh, so interesting. All right. Well, were there any other concepts or points that you wanted to touch on or part of your experience that you'd like to bring in?
No, not really. I think we covered a lot of it. I mean, I'm always learning new things and trying to learn new things and sharing what I can on my, you know, on TikTok or YouTube and Instagram. So I very much enjoyed this conversation. And
yeah, it's been awesome.
I think it was super fun to talk about these topics, because I mean, this is what gets me excited about life, is the stuff that we talked about today.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm just going to read. So when I was like going through some of your YouTube channels, I was like, I wrote down, cause sometimes you share Bible verses and share what you've learned from that, and parables and stoicism and philosophy and Buddhism, which I'm just so interested in all those things. And then I wrote down having a beginner's mind, like confirmation bias, cognitive dissonance, the thief of joy. I just, all those things are so, I'm so curious about all those things. I love learning them. It reminded me of like Brené Brown and Adam Grant and some of those authors that you mentioned and stuff. And yeah, I think I was just, yeah, I'm like, oh, I'm so excited for this conversation. It's all
I know. I feel like we need to have a second list and chat some more, because I feel like we could talk on and on with you about all this stuff. Yeah. Yeah. But it's so interesting. And so, yeah, anyone that's listening that wants to know more about, I mean, you really do a beautiful job with it. And I know you said, how did you say at the beginning when you're just talking, but I think it's beautiful because you're taking a concept and you're just wanting to share like what you've gained from it. And so I find it like, I love that. It's thoughtful and you're sharing something that's meaningful to you. And I definitely think it's so valuable. So,
and I liked your format as well, because like podcasts can be long and like listening or reading a book is long, but you're giving kind of like a, what, 7-ish, 8 minute just thought. And so it made me, I was like, I could listen to it and then think about it for a while. Like, and then say, oh, okay, which one of these is interesting to me now? Like, oh, okay, I want to listen to this one. And it makes you, it gives you kind of more of a concept to think about how you see it. Like you're giving us your idea and what it is, but then it also leads into your own thoughts about how you see it. And it's a good format. I like that a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And sometimes those smaller doses are nice, because like you said, then you can go think about it for a while. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like I'm listening to books like Audible and I listen to like 2 or 3 hours and I just think, whoa, I just took in so much information. Right. Like, what do I think on now? You know? Yeah. So I do. I like the format a lot and I think it could be valuable to a lot of people. So we will link it in the show notes here and you guys can just click right over to his account, but it's Just Another Runner. Well, _just_another_runner_. But again, just click through, link over.
Yeah. And so you said you're on, so YouTube, of course, and then under the same name.
Yeah. If you search Just Another Runner anywhere,
it'll come up.
Come up.
Okay. Great. You're on LinkedIn.
TikTok underscores and stuff. But
yeah.
You just kind of have to add them to make it readable. Yeah.
And then you're YouTube on TikTok as well. Yeah. Okay, perfect.
Oh, cool. I didn't know you were on TikTok.
Yeah, awesome. And then even if you just want to see beautiful Utah and beautiful photography, like as you're scrolling, I'm like, oh, wow, this is it's so gorgeous. Pretty. And the cool photos with your dog and with you running in the mountains. And I don't know, it's really
you're
cool.
Very skilled at photography too. Like, it's just beautiful.
Well, thank you. Really, you guys are so nice. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but it's kind of not embarrassing, but almost nerve-wracking to talk to people that see what you put out, because like creativity is like putting out a piece of yourself. I'm sure you guys feel like this with the podcast, like you're sharing pieces of yourself, and that vulnerability, like to use a term from Brené Brown, like there's oftentimes like a vulnerability hangover. Like I share so much and then I'm like, oh, I should not have said so much, like that was too much to share, or they're not going to get the concept. And so I'm very grateful and flattered that you guys think that what I'm doing is good. Cause I'm not an expert. Like I just do this cause I think it's fun and it helps me.
I think that sometimes is the best. I shouldn't say the best, like the experts are amazing too, but sometimes just having someone that is processing through these concepts themselves and then sharing it in a way that we can relate to is just so powerful and just like hits you different, you know, than reading it from an expert book or whatever. And those have their places too, but I think it's great. So
this has been a great conversation.
I know. Thank you so much for making the time for us, and just We're just glad we connected.
Thank you for the invitation. And if, like you said, if I start to cover other interesting topics, maybe we do this again and cover.
Yeah, I love it.
We would love to. Yeah.
I love to hear your guys' perspectives on, you know, the different topics that I'm learning and sharing. And you guys provided, you know, a lot to think about. So.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
You as well. And I'm excited to go and scroll through and listen to more of your videos. And I was thinking we'll have to, for those listening, we'll have to share a couple of his videos on our feed just so you can see and his photos and stuff. So if you don't mind, we'll pop them over there so people can see. So yes. Well, we always end our interviews by asking the wrap up question, how you find beauty in life after going through the transitions that you've been through.
I knew that question was coming and like, I'm going to struggle to be able to convey it in adequately, but I keep coming back to the creative process, at least for me, like, and that doesn't need, like, for me, I like to create these videos, and I did a 4-part series on my faith crisis, and that was incredibly therapeutic in a way for me to be able to create something. And then I did put it out there, but I don't think that you need to necessarily share whatever creative outlet that you had. I think if you are able to write it down or paint some abstract painting or listen to music or write music or perform music there, I feel like creativity is a way to find beauty in shifts that happen in your life. And at least that's what I've felt in my own lived experience. So,
yeah. I love that.
I love that. Yeah.
Really, it can be bring so much beauty in life to be able to have a creative expression. And I do feel like it kind of grounds you and just, and really like you produce creatively. I don't know. Let's cut that out. You know, you end up in your creative pursuits, like producing things that matter, you know, and that I think bring you meaning. So yeah, I love that. I don't know. It's like, I don't know if anyone's ever answered that question with creativity, it makes me think. Like, yeah.
And it's interesting. My daughter read this book and I'm started to read it called The Creative Act of Being by Rick Rubin. And it's pretty much described like what you said, that we're all creative in our own way. And even if that we're just creating our lives. So we're constantly creating, even if it isn't like a piece of art or, you know, a drawing or music or whatever, but it's how important that is for being a human and how we can find beauty in that. So actually it goes along with that. And it is a really good book. I highly recommend it, but
yeah, I've seen quotes from it and things, but
yeah. But I love that answer. That's great.
Yeah. Creativity. I love it.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. We've loved this and
we'll have to do it again.
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Thanks guys.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and would love if you subscribe to the podcast and followed along as we continue hearing more inspiring stories. You can also follow us on Instagram at Beautiful Shifts Podcast, where we will post updates with our latest interviews.
We'd like to thank the band We the Lion for giving us permission to use their beautiful song Move Along for our podcast. Take a minute to listen to the song and the lyrics and enjoy.
I find a way to know myself. All my thoughts are mine again. And begin to understand where to go. Now it's time to move along. Now it's time to move along. Take this journey as my own. Feel the strength right in my bones. All I want is to believe life is my own. Life. Start again, the mind is free now. I can feel the truth in me. I'll take a chance, I won't be wrong. Yes, now it's time to move along. Now it's time to move along. Take this journey as my own. I feel the strength rise.